Welcome back to the Hollow Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday, Hollow Cult. So you know what that means. You've chosen us to hang out with you to get you through the work week. And for that, we are forever grateful. Glad to be here. Hope everybody's week goes good. If you're new here, me and Kyle like to talk a little bit. If you don't want to hear us talk about show housekeeping stuff, just fast forward to about the 6 minute mark. We'll get to the crux of the show. If you do want to listen to us talk, cool, hang out, it's fine. If you're not new here, welcome back. And on that note, check us out at all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast and you'll find us there. Come be part of the community, join the cult. It's a cool thing to do. You know the drill. If you have a paranormal experience you'd like to have us feature on a future episode of our listener experience shows, Kyle's got some details for you.
I do. HollowSkyPodcast@gmail.com. Easy peasy. Send that shit over there. Steve and I will get it. And eventually we'll get them back online and rocking and rolling.
We're getting there.
It's a process.
We're getting there.
But don't worry, we always appreciate each and every one of you sending over your stories. It's special, and we don't want to take away from that. Just time has been dumb lately.
Not on our side.
Yeah, yeah, we're battling the demons that we have once in a while, and you know how it goes. You guys know. I'm just preaching to the choir here.
We're trying our best.
We try our best. Sometimes it's not good, but hey, at least we're honest. Can't take that away from us.
Yeah, that's all we got. If you'd like to support the show, plenty of ways you can do it. We got a Patreon, $7 a month. You can get Patreon exclusive episodes. There's 50 plus over there. You get all our regular content early and also ad free, which I know a lot of people like. You also get some Casket Breath Jams, the AI metal band of every genre you can think of that's from an alternate dimension. You can also get merch drops, kind of be the first ones for new merch drops. Sometimes you get merch coupons, all kinds of good stuff. Speaking of merch, hollowskypodcast.com. Got a store tab over there. You can check it out. Shirts, hats, beanies, stickers, anything your heart can possibly desire is over there. Another way, best way you can support the show is share it word of mouth. Just keep us out there. Share the show drops on the social medias. Share it to anybody you know that listens to weird stuff. Go over to YouTube, subscribe over there. Like the episodes over there. Hype them, all that stuff. Every little bit of traction counts. It cannot be overlooked. And we appreciate everybody that puts the time in with that. You can also go to wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating and review. When I find them, I will gladly shout you out. This week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from our friend, Not an Alien. Not
You're
an
definitely
alien.
An alien.
Winky face, I should say.
Definitely Not an alien.
Winky face. Not an Alien titled this just On Me, 5 stars. The guys are awesome. I look forward to every episode. If I were an alien, I'd let them do the probing on me.
Oh.
That took a turn.
That is an unexpected turn.
Yeah, it took a turn.
Unexpected turn.
Got caught in my throat there.
He didn't know. You don't know how to act with that.
No. Let them do the probing on me. Well, not an alien. I mean, I appreciate the sentiment. You know?
I think it's one of the few times we're kind of left speechless.
Yeah, you're right.
Wow.
Yeah. I'll take it.
I mean, a win's a win, right?
5 stars is 5 stars, baby.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Yep. Well, not an alien, winky face. Thank you.
I'm glad that a lot of us are just pure degenerates.
Yeah. Our vibe attracts our tribe. That's for sure.
Yeah.
That is for
sure. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Yeah, but not an alien. Thank you for taking us into consideration and also leaving us 5 stars.
It's appreciated.
The last way you can support the show is take the time to support our fabulous sponsors, which you shall hear from right about now. Hey, Holocult. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges. From sleepless nights to stress-filled days, Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends. They'll deliver them discreetly to your front doorstep. And you can get them 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code HOLO. Having trouble sleeping? They've got a gummy for that. Sleepy Time gummies knock you out in about 15 minutes. They leave you feeling refreshed, and they don't leave you with a feeling of grogginess or hangover. Having just one of those days where just everybody sucks and everything is going wrong, you just need to reset your mood and your day as a whole. They've got gummy for that too. Epic Euphoria gummies. Just reset your mood and turn your frown upside down. What makes these different is how they've paired THC with other cannabinoids, with herbs and adaptogens. You're just not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, Holocult listeners get 20% off their first order with code HOLO. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code HOLO at checkout to save 20% on your first order. And just like that, we're back. Magically, we're back. And today's case that I'm bringing to you, first off, trigger warning. There is elements of child abuse, child SA.
Oh, God. Case.
So if you're very sensitive to that kind of stuff, you're going to want to skip this one.
I mean, I should probably skip this one.
Yeah. It's a missing person case, but it's also got supposed paranormal elements to it, but the system failed this poor girl in every possible way you can fathom. So it's kind of like pertinent to the case to see how like bad everything was. And it's really disheartening. But
that's sad.
Yeah. Yeah. And you guys are, this is drops Monday. You're going to hear a lot more about it. You've probably seen commercials coming out because there's going to be a documentary on Discovery coming up next week, the 29th, on the same case. So I figured we'd dive into it. The disappearance of Teresa Ann Beer, also known as the Kidnap by Bigfoot case. So I'll do a little synopsis here before we get into the crux of the show. On June 1st, 1987, 16-year-old Teresa Ann Beer was about to go on an adventure. She was going to skip school and go on a Bigfoot hunt. She and a man by the name of Russell Skip Welch, who was 43 at the time.
Yeah, that sounds safe.
Yeah, sus. Yeah. Would head off to the mountains of the Sierra Nevada, where she would reportedly become separated from him while they were looking for Sasquatch. Welch was subsequently charged with abducting Teresa, but the charge was later dismissed. They went camping near Shut Eye Peak, about 25 miles northeast of Bass Lake in California, and he was questioned by deputies when he returned without her. She was last seen at around 7:20 p.m. Welch explained that Bigfoot had abducted her. The foul play was suspected. Searches throughout the region produce no sign of beer. She has never been seen again, nor has any evidence turned up. Was this a simple case of kidnapping and murder by a man high on meth? Or was it, as Skip claimed, a Bigfoot abduction in the Sierra Nevadas?
So he was a meth head?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, fuck.
She came from, but she didn't stand a chance, which is devastating.
So they, not that I want, spoiler, they never find her again?
No.
I'm already conflicted early in the story. Like, because my sus radar is going off and being like, dude, you're a psychopath and you did something with this girl.
Which is where 99% of everyone stands. Except that he has woven such a tale that it had taken place that and the lack of evidence means he got to roam free until he died.
What?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I need to hear this out before I make my judgment, but I am leaning heavy to crucifixion.
So before I get into this, the gene pool that Teresa comes from gets really convoluted. It's really probably tough to follow here. So bear with me. Okay. So she was born on April 16th, 1971 to Shirley and David Beer. Teresa grew up with her mother, Shirley, and her father, David. The couple also had two other daughters, Yolanda, who lived with David's grandmother, and Vicky, who lived at home with Teresa. According to a book written by journalist Jay O'Connell in 2020 called Meth, Murder, and Bigfoot, A California Crime Saga, Shirley was horribly abusive to her young daughters. When Teresa was about 3 years old, she was severely injured and ended up in the hospital. Shirley had pulled Teresa's legs between the crib beds and twisted them so bad that they were broken. She had also beat Teresa, breaking several ribs. At this point, social services stepped in and took Teresa and her sisters away. About the same time, Teresa's parents split up. Teresa and her sister was placed in foster care with a woman from the local church named Sylvia Pierce. There's not a whole lot of information that I could find about this like specific era of her life, but what I could find, it seemed like the foster system was doing her well when they placed her with Sylvia. She was doing better. Things were going good. The foster family was loving and took care of them. Unfortunately, a few years later, Teresa's father, David, decided that he wanted custody of the girls again. He had divorced Shirley, and he was remarried to a new woman named Marjorie, and he went on to get custody of the girls. It's going to get crazy here. So, Margie had previously been married to Shirley's half-brother, John Richmond. So David and Shirley were married, got divorced. Mm-hmm. David marries Margie, who is divorced from Shirley's half brother.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a gene puddle that's a wicked web that's spun.
It sounds like it. I don't know. I'm just trying to take it in.
Yeah. Okay, so David was granted custody. They moved to Southern California, where, unfortunately for the two girls, Margie wasn't much better than their birth parents. She also started to be abusive to the daughters. By starving them, she would lock up the refrigerator, sit there and eat meals in front of them while they were starving. Pretty big piece of shit.
How the fuck can you do that?
By being a pretty big piece of shit.
And then the fact that those people still get to walk around blows my fucking mind.
It's crazy.
instantaneously upon, of course, a rightful trial, but instantaneously that guilty verdict comes down, you should be bare minimum locked up for the rest of your life.
Oh, yeah.
With zero chance of never, ever, 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 ever a chance for redemption, ever.
Yep.
And it's you just hurt a kid like that in any way like that, that's a wrap. Done. Over. Done. You're gone. It's over with.
And it's like a testament to how much literally every aspect of her life that's supposed to be, you know, protecting her and defending her failed. Even the fail safes, like the CPS and the foster system failed because they put, like, even if the mother was the abuser, like the father was there.
He was complacent. Like,
here you go. Just have him again.
And there's no way, man. Like, motherfuckers need to do better when it comes to protecting kids.
Yeah.
Everybody needs to do better.
It sucks. Teresa would eventually return to Fresno to her great-grandmother's house. Soon after, Teresa's uncle, which is Margie's ex-husband, John, blind Johnny Richmond, was granted custody of Teresa. He was a 42-year-old man who claimed to have lost his eyesight while playing Russian roulette, although some people believed he could still see vaguely.
That's a fucking solid role model there. What a shit show. How the fuck does the courts go, oh, you're playing Russian roulette and we're blind. You're definitely worthy of having these kids. You're a responsible adult.
Yeah, it gets way worse.
Oh, great. Yay.
Blind Johnny's daughters from his first marriage lived with Margie and David, who just kind of lost custody of Teresa. He also had two sons that lived with him, with his wife, his now wife, who is a prostitute. On top of that, Blind Johnny also had a 17-year-old girlfriend who lived in the house with them named Tammy Newman.
Well, there's also another reason to be placed in prison.
Yes. John did not treat Teresa any better. He would often make her miss school to stay home to babysit his sons. It was also claimed that he and a lot of his drug addict friends sexually abused Teresa. This would later be confirmed by Tammy, the 17-year-old girlfriend.
Fucking scorched earth.
Yeah. Confirmed through a detective, Doug Stokes, who worked the case and spoke with the author of the book, Jay O'Connell, one of John's friends, who, well, you can assume took place in all of this horrible shit, was a 43-year-old methamphetamine user, also self-described amateur Bigfoot enthusiast named Russell Skip Welch. He was the one who took Teresa to the Sierra Nevada mountains. Skip had been married to a woman named Shannon, but according to media reports, she had passed away in 1985 and died of a drug overdose.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. Skip painted houses to earn money, but he also had an interest in camping and searching for minerals in the wilderness. Skip's other hobby was filing mineral claims.
Little fucking meth crystals.
Yeah. Not like this girl didn't really stand much of a chance.
You know, and you know, I know that I'm speaking out of turn here, but it's fucking ironic that when it comes to child safety, all of this shit is always exposed well after the fact of a passing or disappearance.
Yep.
Never, you know, it's almost like when they're alive and well, nobody pays it any, like, zero fucking attention. And then when it's, you know, a missing persons case or a homicide, then the story gets unraveled.
Yeah,
rather quickly in most cases.
What could we have done different? What could we have done different?
Oh, I don't know. Not give them to fucking meth heads. That's a start. That's a fucking start. Or even bare minimum, not even a meth head. You gave them to a fucking dude who went blind from Russian roulette. If that doesn't scream responsible adult, I don't know what does.
Yeah, you're right.
fucking, this is the craziest story I've ever heard in my life. And we've talked about some shit.
It's bonkers.
It's insanity.
It's bonkers that the scariest stuff has nothing to do with the paranormal.
Yeah.
Okay, so Skip had filed paperwork for other claims in the north of the state of California, near the southern boundary of Yosemite National Park. This remote area of the country, there are thousands of acres of untamed wilderness. One of the areas where Skip liked to go, according to the book, was an area called Ghost Canyon. Skip believed it was once an Indian burial ground back in the early 1800s. Fresno and the area around it, like a lot of areas around the United States at that time, had a serious meth problem. The meth trade was exploding. Both John and Skip used meth. It was always around the house. On the morning she disappeared, Teresa left home as if she was going to go to school. But she had a secret plan. Earlier that week, she had told two of her friends that she planned to skip school and head into the mountains with Skip so they could look for Bigfoot, who she claimed Skip had seen before. Skip was a self-proclaimed Bigfoot expert, apparently, and he knew just where to find them. So on June 1st, Skip came over to John Richmond's house. He told John that he would drive Teresa to school, but their actual plan, as she had told her friends, was to search for Bigfoot. Or at least that's what Teresa thought was the plan. After that, Teresa disappeared. When she didn't show up at school, administrators called the house and talked to John. Which, in another weird turn of events, John told the administrator at the school that Teresa was homesick, when he had no idea where she was.
It's hard telling the motivation behind that. Was he in on it with Skip? Did he just not give a shit? Did he have a bunch of meth at home and he wasn't trying to? Because I know when meth heads get all tweaked up, they become hella paranoid.
Yeah.
Like,
that's probably true too.
Like, I've been around people on it, and like, paranoia isn't even a good description of how they actually are. Yeah. They are out of their fucking minds with paranoia. I worked with the dude, love the dude when he's sober. Not talking shit at all about the guy. But we was in a whole another fucking town. Like, hours away from his hometown. Hours away. He was convinced that in this particular house on this random ass street, that his old lady was in there having an affair. Yeah, we just pull into the neighborhood. It's not like we'd been there for days or weeks or anything like that. Just got there, and he knew that was the house. That was it.
Huh.
And I'm like, oh, my God. This is going to end bad.
Yeah.
This is going to be bad.
Yeah. That's kind of where this goes, too.
It's like they're out of their minds, man. Out of their minds.
Yeah. He admitted that he had lied by saying Teresa was homesick. He later told the police that he lied because he wanted to handle the matter himself. He spent the day searching for her, speaking with various acquaintances, none of which saw Teresa, but most of them warned him about how shady Skip was.
I mean, he is a good Samaritan and all.
Yeah. But as to why he lied, like a lot of other parts of this case, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, I think you're onto something with the whole meth thing, like not wanting.
Dude, I mean, that makes the most sense.
Yeah. We do know a few things about what happened that morning. After leaving Teresa's house, Skip and Teresa stopped off at his daughter Chandra's house because he was having some trouble with his super sweet 1976 Monte Carlo. Broke down. He had to work on it at his daughter's house. One of the things that's particularly disturbing about this, among obviously everything else, is that according to the book that was written, even his daughter Chandra later told police that she had a bad feeling about Skip.
So I don't know, like, why don't you be a person and interject?
Yeah.
Throwing that out there.
Yeah. Because
throwing that out there, man. Like, if anybody I knew around me was about to get in the car or whatever with a bad person that gave me fucking the ick,
with a meth creepster,
yeah, I'm going to be like, nah, how about you don't? Because I'm about to make a big fucking scene here in a minute. So let's just not do that. Let's go get some ice cream or something, you know? Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Ooh.
You're about to get so much more angry.
I probably will.
She told, keep in mind, this is Skip's daughter, told police that Skip had a bad habit.
Uh-oh.
A habit of offering young women drugs and using that to lure them into the woods for sexual encounters.
My God.
One such example was a 17-year-old girl named Michelle that Skip had taken on a previous trip. She was interviewed by detectives after Teresa's disappearance. She was warned by friends not to go with him, but she did anyway. She was, however, smart enough to bring two big male friends with her. These friends were about 10 years older than her. I don't know what was going on in this town, like where the 30-year-olds are hanging out with the 17-year-olds and everybody's just cool with it. Weird.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
Weird. 10 years older. One of them was a guy she was casually seeing named Sam and another guy named Corky.
Cool.
Well, while they were out there, Skip started taking a lot of meth and said that he saw a white monster in the woods. Apparently during this time, Skip started talking about how Bigfoot worshipped women, which at first kind of seemed like a positive thing to them, but then Michelle said that Skip started talking about satanic sacrifices. She said that all of them were terrified, and it's not clear whether the things that Michelle and the other guys saw and heard were from paranoia or possibly drug use, or whether they were freaked out by the environment and the stories, or whether they actually saw or heard something. But according to the book, Michelle told police that later that night, she woke up screaming. She said she saw something that she described as a white being, 3 foot tall, with big eyes, something she said that looked like the devil. She started running in fear and almost fell off a cliff, but Corky grabbed her before she could go off the cliff.
Mm. Yeah, there's so many problems.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I want to believe that, but at the same time, you're with meth heads and you're underage and you're casually seeing one of these dudes that is not underage.
And like, she could have been easily drugged.
Yeah. Furthermore, it's even more disturbing and alarming that everyone around Skip knew he was a piece of shit and literally no one did anything.
Nope.
They would just be like, yo, Steve, Skip is a little bit of a graper. You should probably not hang out with him. And then you're like, yeah, but I'm going to go hang out with him because we're going to find Bigfoot.
And it was only afterwards they started telling the detectives and shit like, yeah, he took this girl to the forest and she disappeared. I knew he was a little weird.
That's what I'm saying. Like, why did no one do anything? It's fucking crazy to me that people are like, what, you're afraid of making Skip mad? He probably weighs 103 pounds soaking wet.
He was probably
he can't bite you because all of his teeth are gone.
He was probably everyone's meth plug.
Probably.
So old Skip here seems to have an MO about him that's taking underage girls into the woods to look for Bigfoot and then mething them.
Is Skip still alive by chance?
No.
Damn it.
No.
I was going to say, I hope that the end result of all of this and the documentary coming out and all that in this episode, I hope that word gets back to Bigfoot. And Bigfoot is pissed.
Yeah.
Because they have now tainted his name and his good reputation.
Yeah.
And he goes on the hunt for Skip.
That would be.
Or you know what? Guardians of the Woods. Bigfoot, putting out the call there, man. Find the meth heads.
That would be.
I won't say anything more past that, but.
Cryptid justice.
Yes. I mean, you catch a lot of respect if that's what you turned into.
Yeah. And with that, on June 1st, 1987, Skip and Teresa loaded up in a super sweet busted 1976 Monte Carlo and headed into the Sierra Nevada mountain range near Shut Eye Peak. At 9:30 that night, when Teresa still wasn't home, John finally called the Fresno police to report her missing. 4 days later, on June 5th, 1987, a police officer spotted Skip's brown, super sweet 1976 Monte Carlo by a trailer park near North Fork, a town in the foothills of the mountain. It would later be explained that Skip had come down from the mountain to visit a friend, Dorothy Davis. He was distraught and told her a story about a young girl who had been taken by a satanic group and was physically changed into a white-looking creature, and she was being kept in the Sierras. Davis said Skip was definitely high and assumed he was delusional. She also reported that his car was more beat up than usual and had multiple dents in it. A few days after Teresa was reported missing, Blind Johnny received a threatening phone call from a young female. She told him that Skip was packing a pistol and wanted her to say to him, "If you continue to make trouble for him, you will have more trouble from him. Even your kids can get hurt." And quote, "Tell the police that Skip had taken Teresa to school, dropped her off, and an unknown blonde girl had picked up Teresa." End quote. 5 days later, authorities were able to find Skip at his mother's house in Sunnydale, Fresno. He was arrested for a previous drunk driving violation. During this questioning, Skip said he was a Bigfoot expert. Quote.
Of course he was.
And spoke very seriously about Bigfoot. He claimed that there was a very large number of them living in the mountains and underground caves, and that he had communicated with them on several different occasions. He was absolutely serious about this theory that there were bipedal, ape-like creatures living in the mountains. Skip said not only had he seen them, he had interacted with them on multiple occasions, and the creatures who lived up with the Bigfoot and other creatures that lived up in the mountains. He said that he had, quote, not violated them, and that therefore they made themselves readily available to him. End quote.
Oh.
Yeah, take that, however.
I mean, is like he insinuating what I think he's insinuating?
Skip's a creepster. So let's not put it past him.
I mean, Skip's obviously not a very humble person.
I don't know.
Yeah, insinuating that he even has the ability to violate a Bigfoot.
Have not violated them, so they make themselves readily available to him.
I hope that's not what he means.
Me too, but he's a weirdo, so
he's definitely a weirdo.
We can't cut it out. So
Yeah.
He said he had taken pictures of Bigfoot on multiple occasions. According to the book, Skip had even taken his alleged Bigfoot Polaroids to an expert. The chair of the anthropology department at Fresno State University. This anthropologist agreed to meet with Skip and look at his pictures. When Skip showed the anthropologist the photos that he was so excited about, the anthropologist told Jay O'Connell, the author of the book, years later that he vividly remembered that meeting, that he didn't see anything in the pictures except shadows, and that he talked to Skip about projection, the idea that we project images of expectations. Basically, we see what we want to see sometimes. The expert saw zero evidence of Bigfoot, but Skip was absolutely convinced that he had seen Bigfoot, and he wasn't going to let someone else tell him otherwise. In fact, a few days later, Skip left a brown paper bag full of bones at the anthropologist's office that apparently were not human in nature. This dude's bonkers. It's
batshit crazy.
Yeah.
And you know, it almost had me. It almost had me when he was telling the police, "Listen, I took photographic evidence to so-and-so of this university." For a second in my brain, I was like, "Yeah, that's kind of weird. I don't really expect a meth head to make that part up." Right? And then you're like, but then they question this guy and he's like, "Yeah, he came here. He definitely did."
Mm-hmm.
However, there wasn't shit in the photograph.
He also brought a bag of bones.
Yeah. Could be anything.
Probably fucking rotisserie chicken bones from
Walmart.
Probably.
That he didn't pay for.
No.
He definitely ate it while walking around the store.
At this point, the police began to question him about Teresa. His story changed several times, and he insisted on calling her Sam, a nickname that he had given her, which kind of muddied the water in the missing persons case, because the initial flyers that were put out, they had named her Sam on the flyers.
Yeah, because that makes sense.
That makes sense.
Let's look for so-and-so that I have a nickname for. We'll just use the nickname because everybody knows that it's my nickname for her.
Literally everyone's dropping the ball. The ball's not even in the court at this point.
No, no. The ball's not even existent.
No.
It's gone.
So some of the stories that our buddy Skip, not our buddy, fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Skip here told was, first he claimed to drop her off at school. And the cops are like, no, you didn't. So he's like, yeah, you're right. We went to the mountain to look for Bigfoot. Then he claimed that Teresa had ran off in the woods with another young woman and later claimed that she had left with other campers. And they're like, we don't think that's true. And he's like, well, that's probably also right. Bigfoot had forcefully taken her.
I love
and
it.
They're like, oh, did he? And then he's like, well, actually, Teresa got really excited after she'd seen Bigfoot a couple times, which led her to run off into the woods to chase the creature, and he couldn't find her. And they're like, oh, did she? And he said, but don't bother looking for her because she's not coming back, because she's going to be happier with the Bigfoot community in the mountains than she would have been at home.
I mean, Skip does seem like he's got his shit together.
Yeah, and I would rather live with a Bigfoot colony than have to live in the meth colony.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hands down.
Yeah.
This guy, not only is he a meth head, he's a fucking moron.
Yeah.
I love how he's just telling them stories, and they're like, yeah, it's not real. And he's like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
What really happened, though, was this. And they're like, no, it didn't. And he goes, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I hate to break it to you, but after the first one, they're not going to believe anything you fucking say.
Oh,
but you're done. Did.
He said that she was going to be happier in the Bigfoot community because Bigfoots are, quote, super intelligent beings.
Okay.
He went on to say that not only did Bigfoot exist in the Nevada mountains, Sierra Nevada mountains, but that Bigfoot was guarding a race of super intelligent beings that lived on the mountain. Hmm. He said these particular Bigfoots are 10 to 11 feet tall, hairy, and this master race of beings that lived in the mountains look like regular people. He said one of the master race humanoids apparently really liked Teresa. Skip said that the super intelligent being who was hanging out with Teresa actually kind of looked like her.
Hmm.
The tale is just telling itself at this point.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, and the unfortunate thing is that, like, on any given day, I probably would believe that story. Except for the fact that you're a meth head and you have a rap sheet of doing this to people.
Yeah.
Because a lot of what he's saying is not exactly far off. However, you can never discount the fact that he's a meth head.
And
I can't drive that home enough. And he's definitely a creeper. The fuck probably couldn't afford ayahuasca and was like, well, second best thing, meth.
Let's see.
I'm gonna go on a spiritual journey and smoke a fucking battery.
Yeah. So Skip said the super intelligent being who was hanging out with Teresa actually kind of looked like her, and that they were the same age, both medium height, and he said they ran off together to escape our abusive household. After that, Skip told this wild story about being attacked by a devil-like creature. He said he was trying to get down the mountain and drive away, but he said the creature basically picked up his car and made it hover off the ground. He then said that the entity was actually inside the vehicle with him, And he said when he looked in the rearview mirror, he saw the face of a man in the back seat. He then said that he began to believe that he was actually seeing the face of Satan riding in the car with him. So he told the detectives that he decided to fight the devil in his car.
He's definitely a noble man.
Yes. Yes. Because the police started asking him, "Hey, Skip, your hands are kind of fucked up. What happened?" He told police that he started swinging at the devil, but instead was hitting a super sick wooden speaker box that he had in the back of his car while trying to fight the devil. He then showed the detectives a bunch of wounds on his hands and scratches all over his knuckles that he said he got while trying to fight the devil and accidentally punching his wooden speaker box.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, not that far-fetched.
No. Oh, God. Skip told detectives that he managed to escape this devil spirit by calling on the power of Jesus. And after he apparently exorcised the devil from his car, that's when he drove down to his friend's house in Norfolk. But he said he returned to the mountains the next day where he saw Teresa again. He said she was running through the trees with this other super intelligent humanoid girl. He called out to her, but she didn't respond. At one point during the police interviews, Skip says, without the officers asking anything pertinent at all, that if they happened to find Teresa, there would be no signs of sexual abuse. He claimed that she was willing to do things with him, but he would have never done anything with a young girl. That was not his nature.
Oh.
Pretty much everyone in the town begs to differ, Skip.
Well, I mean,
literally everyone. Like,
real question, at what point do the police just stop entertaining the nonsense?
I don't know, man. I feel like they're so, I don't know. It's like,
there's no fucking, like, nobody in their right mind sits down with this guy and goes, yeah, he's definitely, I mean, he made a good point, you know. He definitely wanted to do things with him. He didn't force it. And I mean, I could see how you would think that he forced her because his hands are all fucked up, but he did punch a speaker box.
Fighting the devil,
you know? So, I mean, technically the story lines up. Like, at what point did the police go,
shut up,
dude?
I feel like they're like wading through the bullshit to try to get any semblance of truth.
But at that point, you know that you can't. Fair. You know that you can't. Fair. This dude is literally, you'll call him on it and he admits it. He goes, yeah, you're right. What actually happened was this. And then you're like, no, it didn't. And he, yeah, you're right. And then he does another one.
It's depressing.
Like at this point, I feel like the answer is pretty fucking obvious as to what happened, because absolutely no one comes forward and goes, listen, if you do find her and she starts telling you about how we did stuff, I just want you to know that she wanted to.
Well, he said there wouldn't be any signs of it.
Oh,
because he wasn't like that. She wanted to.
But he said they did do stuff.
No, he said they didn't.
Oh, I thought you said that he said that they did do stuff.
He said if they found her, there would be no signs of sexual assault, because that was not his nature. Said she wanted to, but he said no.
Gotcha. However, like you said, everyone in town begs to differ.
Said you, that is your nature.
Yeah, that's definitely what you do. And not to mention, you talked about possibly violating Bigfoot.
Yeah.
That's a weird thing to say.
Jesus. Yeah.
Because, I mean, Bigfoot may semi-resemble humans, however not. And so by, like, you saying that in my head isn't a whole lot of different than you being like, yeah, I mean, the horse over there is my friend.
I knew it was going to end up at that route at some point.
Yeah, right? I mean, You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't even want to think about that situation.
And however, Bigfoot is the guardian of super intelligent beings.
True. I love that description too. I mean, she's with a super intelligent being.
Yeah, she's way happier because she's with a super intelligent being.
Yeah.
What a piece of shit. Anyway,
dude, did he at least get the death penalty?
Oh no, you're gonna get real mad.
Oh, awesome.
So Skip agreed to show authorities the campsite where he and Teresa allegedly stayed at. Keep in mind, this is after he told them that he took her to school and then was like, nah, I didn't actually do that. That wouldn't actually be. So he led them to a small grove of trees at the meadow's edge along Brown's Creek. At the inner area of this grove, there was a smoldering fire among some heavy layer of pine needles that appeared to be somewhat damp. This burnt area was approximately 3.5 feet wide by 8 feet long. There were these blankets that were put up. They were in a specific formation. I'm assuming probably like a tent, maybe. There was a camera, a purse, an off-white bra, a t-shirt, pictures of the countryside, and a picture of Skip playing a guitar while sitting on what appeared to be the blanket in the grove area. There were also pictures of Teresa. The campsite where all this was found turned out to be completely staged by Skip.
Oh, what the fuck?
He went back and completely staged this entire campsite. From the photos he took of the topography of the land, local deputies figured out that the pictures he took that he claimed were from the campsite was actually at a place 20 miles away in Ghost Canyon, where Skip had a mineral claim.
Holy moly.
Yeah. Even though he had allegedly lied about the campsite, the meadow and the canyons were both searched. A helicopter searching for clues and signs of Teresa's whereabouts spotted something on the hillside above Brown Creek's camp. It turned out to be a blue shirt that belonged to Skip. It had meth in the pocket.
Of course it did.
Yeah. Searches by bloodhounds were done near the camp. The dogs did detect Teresa's scent at one point, but it didn't amount to anything. No other clues were found. One of Skip's relatives told authorities that Skip had told them about a rock at Ghost Canyon, where a girl needed to be tied up and sacrificed to the devil. Skip's 19-year-old nephew, James Welch, came in voluntarily to talk to the police. This might be the only decent human being out of the whole group. He said he needed to talk to someone because he had very important information that could help solve a case. He said he'd gone up into the mountains several times with his uncle. He said he knew his uncle very well, and that his theory was that Skip had led the detectives to a fake campsite, and that he had actually taken Teresa to Ghost Canyon. James said that he thought his uncle, quote, was just trying to lead us on a wild goose chase, end quote. James said that he got into an argument with Skip at one point, and that Skip told him about what he called the burial site of the devil. James said he first thought Skip was talking about Bigfoot worshiping women in a positive way. He then started to realize that he believed that Skip was talking about making some kind of human sacrifice to Bigfoot.
Dude.
Yeah.
I don't like. There's so many twists and turns in this. It's unreal.
It's crazy.
It just like it legitimately screams delusional method.
Yeah. So, Skip was charged with child endangerment and child stealing. He was arraigned and released on his reconnaissance by a Judge Gallagher. However, this judge did not realize that a Judge Austin had increased Skip's bail to $30,000 after reviewing the case. So they just let him go. Makes However, sense. Luckily they caught their mistake and he was rearrested. 3 days before Skip's trials, Skip's trial, authorities dropped the child stealing charge. They had offered to recommend a 1-year sentence if Skip signed a waiver allowing them to go forward with the murder charges if Teresa's body was located, but Skip refused. The prosecution then decided to drop the case to avoid double jeopardy if they wanted to charge him with murder later, which they did not because they didn't have any evidence. So he went completely scot-free.
And the fucked up thing is everybody knows he did it.
Yep.
And they're just like, eh, like, I'm sorry, but when you charge somebody with child kidnapping, they should never go free, ever, ever, ever. It should be like, it should be instantaneous prison for life.
Yep.
Horrific crimes towards children, bare minimum, prison for life.
Absolutely. Absolutely agreed.
Like, this should not be a process. It should be prison for life. And that's on like the bare minimum side of it.
Yep. The whole like weird mentality of the people in that town, or not necessarily the whole town, but the people that were in that circle, bonkers, man. Dude. While most people are
lucky that I didn't become a fucking lawyer or something, or a prosecutor.
Yeah.
Because I would crucify everyone in that town. If, or a DA or something, whoever has the power, I would hang everybody out to dry.
Yeah.
The cops, everybody. I'd be trying to hammer them all.
Yeah. It's pretty bad. While most people believe that Skip is guilty of killing Teresa and disposing of her body. However, there is a theory put forward by Skip's family that a group of serial killers named the Speed Freak Killers abducted and killed her. While there's as much evidence for the Speed Freak Killers killing her as there is for Bigfoot abducting her. So none. Yeah. Zero.
Yeah.
Despite Chandra admitting that her father was a predator at the time of Teresa's disappearance, she defended him after his arrest, claiming that her father's only crime was practicing poor judgment by taking the young girl to the Sierras. Teresa Ann Beer has never been found. At the time of her disappearance, Teresa was 5'5", 110 pounds. She was last seen wearing a white t-shirt, blue jeans, and lace sandals. She had brown hair and hazel eyes. Teresa's upper front teeth protrude. She has a surgical scar on her lower right leg due to the fracture she received from the abuse by her mother. Her nickname is Sam. If anybody has any information on the case, anyone listening, no matter how small, you can contact the Fresno Police Department at 559-621-2541. Teresa's case number is 8736264.
My heart goes out to her.
Complete failure across the board for this poor girl.
Oh, without question.
Everybody that was supposed to protect her did exactly the opposite.
Yeah, 100% failed her. Absolutely failed her.
It is heartbreaking.
It really is. I can't stand hearing things happen to children. There's not one child that deserves anything like that.
No.
Ever. Ever, ever, ever.
No, but it's ridiculous. And like I said, there's a limited docuseries coming out on Discovery Plus on the 29th. I think they're just going to show it. There's 3 episodes, I believe. They're just going to show it one time through. I don't know if there's going to be replays. Jessica Chobot is hosting it. She was on some of Josh Gates' investigations. And it looks pretty interesting. She's interviewing people in the town. It shows her out, boots on the ground, like at the campsites and stuff.
Are they legitimately going to play the Bigfoot angle, or is it just like a draw?
I think that's what, because the documentary, I think it's called Bigfoot Took Her. But from from a true crime standpoint, and especially from like a parent standpoint, I feel like the paranormal angle is taking everything away from a case that should have been open and shut.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with it. That's why I asked, because I feel like it's a mass disservice to play that card.
I think the only reason they're doing it is because, like, where the two genres overlap, this is like known as the Bigfoot abduction case. So they're just kind of
not.
Yeah, it isn't. Like, Bigfoot did not abduct her.
No.
But that's just what it's known for, because Skip's bonkers ass tail he tried to weave.
Yeah. Like, and don't get me wrong, I would legitimately be more skeptical. I can't say that I would believe Skip, because he's a proven piece of shit. But the thing to me that proves that this isn't paranormal is the simple fact that he didn't stick with his story.
Yeah. He started lying and then just continued lying.
Yeah. Yeah, and like if he would have had a story about Bigfoot and 100% stuck with it and just kept, and that's it. That's my narrative. That's my thing. This is where I'm staying. I would be a little more on the fence. I'd be a little more on the fence. I just, in my gut, would still tell me Skip did it. However, I'd be a little more on the fence and being like, ah, man, like, this is a tough one because he didn't deviate. However, the simple fact that they go, no, it didn't. And he goes, yeah, you're right. Here's what actually happened. That right there tells me you're a fucking liar.
Let me change it 8 more times.
Yeah, you're a fucking liar.
Yeah. And a piece of trash.
And a piece of trash who deserved far worse.
Yeah.
And I hope that you're getting far worse.
He died in 1998, I believe. I thought I wrote that down in my notes, but I did not. Pretty much everyone surrounded with the case except for like Skip's children and Teresa's siblings have either overdosed or died of heart attacks. So
surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise. It's, I don't know. Shit like that is fucking terrible. And if anybody out there ever comes across a situation, even remotely similar, fucking do something about it.
Yeah.
Don't sit around and be afraid of it. Do something about it.
Say something.
And that goes to the fucking cops. Everybody, do the right thing. Come on. This is crazy. That shit should never, that should have not happened 50 times over. The fact that it played out the way that it did is asinine.
Yep. Like I said, it's just testament to that, to Teresa being failed on literally every front of her life. Dude, from the moment she was born, everyone failed her.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. Like, that's 100% facts.
Sucks.
And I just do not understand. I'll never be able to wrap my brain around it. How you could hurt a fucking 3-year-old like that, or a 9-year-old, 12-year-old. I just cannot fathom it.
Nope.
Even a 17-year-old cannot fathom it.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. Like Maddox will turn 16 the end of December. Like, he's still a kid.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
He's still a child.
Dude, you're still a kid in your fucking early 20s.
Yep. And just have like everyone that you turn to just be a piece of garbage.
It's crazy.
Yep. The only person that, like, while the information was not like super available, it seemed like the only person that did her any good was those few short years she lived with Sylvia, the woman from church.
Yeah.
The only savior. That poor woman's, what could be going through her brain, you know, like, she tried to do something good, and like, the state came back in and were like, no, we're just going to give her back. We're going to see how it looks out.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is, man. It just goes to show you like what's wrong with humanity. Yeah. There were like, and this is why I hate true crime. This is why I hate that whole genre, because there's so many things that should be so fucking blatantly obvious. And whether it be the court systems or the police or the family or whomever, everybody just goes, Well, you know, just, you know, it's, we're following, you know, we're just following the rules, guys. Fuck that. Do the right thing. Fuck that.
Yep.
And this, fuck this, that.
And this piece of trash got, didn't get anything.
It's didn't crazy. Get anything. It's fucking crazy, dude.
$30,000 bond, all wiped because they, I'm assuming they thought that they were going to find her body and get him for murder. And they didn't. They didn't get, they didn't find anything.
Assuming she is deceased, which golly, I hope not. I hope she's just hiding. She made it out and she's hiding. Assuming she is deceased, odds are it's not very far from his little gold mine or mineral fucking claim.
No. And there's probably so full of mines out there, you know, like he probably had knowledge and capability of hiding her.
Sure, sure.
Best case scenario is she's living with Bigfoot and the intelligent beings in the Sierras.
Let's hope.
Best case scenario.
Let's hope.
But yeah, that was kind of a somber one, but I know that it's going to be kind of be ticking off on Discovery Plus, and people would probably want to hear our take on it and kind of see how it lines up. I'm interested to see what kind of information they got compared to the information in the book and the information I listened to a couple podcasts and just kind of put that all together.
Did you hear any other consensus that was convinced that it was Bigfoot?
No.
Okay.
Zero evidence. Zero evidence for Bigfoot outside of Skip saying that it was Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Which he also said she voluntarily went with Bigfoot. Bigfoot forcibly abducted her. It was the super intelligent beings that looked like her that she ran off in the woods with. The Satan worshippers turned her into a white devil. You can pretty much everything he said
was a lie.
Was a lie.
Yeah. 100% a lie.
Crazy case.
That is crazy.
So
like you said, I fully agree and support like them mentioning Bigfoot as a possible, or as the tag, the headline is just a disservice to the whole thing.
Yeah. Yep. I feel like it takes away from, like a legitimate tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's it for today. Holocult again. If anybody listening out on the West Coast around Northern California know anything, heard anything, traipse around that area, seen anything, contact the Fresno Police Department. Like, they're still interested in the case. If, you know, they got this documentary coming out, and hopefully it kicks open some doors. I know anything that, like, Josh Gates, which it's not him, but anything like him and his crew does is usually pretty legit, and like I said, she was a member of that show for quite a while. Hopefully she gets the ball rolling, gets some new interest, gets people talking.
That'd be awesome,
and they can get to the bottom. So again, thanks for hanging out with us in this Monday. Check us out at all our socials, and until we meet again, stay safe, stay weird, and remember, the real monsters are human.